Some journeys are better taken together.
Let's walk the talk. 702.
Tim Neary has walked into the studio this morning and he's got a little goodie bag of things that he picked up on the beach. Is that a syringe?
It is medical waste.
Okay.
Yes.
I mean, I should imagine that must have been pretty frightening and illuminating.
Jane, you know, I go up and down to KZN quite often, and what I've brought you here is some stuff that was picked up maybe in an area the size of the newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So there are two areas. If you go down to the bluff is really terrible, and that's got outfall pipes and all sorts of things. And this was picked up at Sheffield Beach, which is basically Ballito.
Mm-hmm.
And what I found rather interesting is, you know, we talk about plastic waste. I don't know any piece of plastic that gets up in the morning and says, excuse me, I'm going to go and pollute a turtle.
Yeah.
You know, there is something else behind it. And that's what I think one's got to look at. And the level of plastic that's lying on this beach is crazy. This is an area that is cleaned up almost daily. And what I did is I then started to dig down, and you can dig down into the soil, into the beach sand. And it doesn't matter if you go down half a meter. There is just as much garbage down there.
So and it's layers and layers.
It's layers and layers and layers. And you'll find that in here is gut, which gets around the animals. There's pieces of netting. That's a bit of net that's there. That's come off of the label of somebody's clothing. The medical waste stuff was fascinating. What really also fascinated me is we're always on about the straws.
Yeah.
And the last maybe 4 or 5 years when I've gone down, I've walked the beach, and I guess for one straw, what do you think I find 1,000 of? Earbuds. Mm-hmm. There is most probably your greatest polluter on the beaches, earbuds. And it was very interesting to see the difference. And I went, we won't do the brand name thing, but there is a normal earbud that we can use.
Mm-hmm.
And there is an earbud that I use, and it's got a paper shaft, so it breaks down. Not much more expensive, but it's quite interesting to see that earbud that we see there breaks up. Now, one of the numbers that was thrown about yesterday was that for every person on the planet, there's 21,000 pieces of plastic in the ocean.
For every one person?
Yeah, for every one person.
Staggering.
It's not the big bits of plastic that we see here that are the problems. It's the microplastics. It's where it started to break down. And we can't get away from plastics. And plastics are good. There's no getting away from it. We need plastic, and we use plastic in our everyday lives. And I just sat there looking at this and thinking to myself, this is not a plastic issue. This is a people issue. And how does one solve that people issue? How do you get around to not having all this stuff floating up? Cigarette lighters, you name it. Bits of old slip-slops. And we always used to go down to the beach, and I mean, even in the years of Port Elizabeth when I lived there, you would go to the beach and you would walk the beach looking for stuff that had come off of the ships at sea. This is not all ships at sea. Yes, there are a lot more ships at sea, and when they're just going down that coastline, they're just dumping their garbage out. I'm sure that these cruise liners would like to convince us that everything that they do, they take ashore and goes into a landfill site or goes into some form of management. But what does one do about this?
Tim, I should introduce you. Is CSI a nature conservationist? We've both just banged in there. I mean, you're just touching on one of my favorite topics because it's such a big one. And what upsets me about Africa in particular, it's a known dumping ground. I mean, big companies come around here, they dump their stuff and off they go. They know that there's very little retribution, and it's got to stop. And it starts from those, you know, big companies up on high down to us just chucking things out. And I'm sure nobody, you know, we don't have thousands of people sitting on the beach cleaning their ears. So it's coming from somewhere.
Well, exactly. So from the beach and looking at all this garbage, and just for your interest, what this is going to be turned into is a friend of mine works in a turtle trust. And this garbage here that's been collected in the plastic is going to come out as little turtles that are giveaways, etc. Trying to get people to understand what's going into the turtles. I think the plastics get even more scary that you and I are sitting here with plastic in our bloodstream.
I know.
And we consume a credit card of plastic a week.
And that can't be good for you.
It can't be good for you.
I mean, you find it in salt.
I was looking at the difference between the what is supposedly the Himalayan salt, but is actually a Pakistani salt, which I found rather interesting, and the salt from the sea. At what point are we going to have to stop using good old Sal Nova salt from Port Elizabeth? Because there's a pollution level. And there's heavy metals, and there's all sorts of concerns that come out with this. But we go back to these microplastics. It can't be reversed. I think that's the scariest thing. Yeah, we talk happily about reducing global warming and trying to control the temperature rise. We can't do anything about this.
Mm.
We can't clean it out.
But why don't we get it? I mean, what is it going to take? Event that we saw in Turkey where people go, hold on a minute, we know that these buildings haven't been built properly. There were warnings out there. I mean, what does it take for us to get it into our heads that what we're doing is not only killing oceans, it'll ultimately kill us?
Well, absolutely. And I think when we look at our shopping centres, at my age, you used to go into the shopping center, buy two tomatoes, one potato, and they would tell you, don't touch the onions, they're not good this week. Okay. And post the war, because my parents they'd been in the war, in the Second World War, they washed things like plastic bags. They recycled correctly. You went along and you got your meat rolled up in paper and you brought it home. You didn't have your meat in nice little containers. And if you have a look to see where do we take them, what do we do with them? So we went from the beach, and I went up to go and work on some indigenous street projects with KwaZulu-Natal Parks Board. Driving through Shushlu Umfolozi, not one, not two, but about three diapers at the side of the road. I looked at the warthogs for quite a while. I couldn't find any warthogs wearing diapers. elephants definitely weren't wearing them.
They hadn't been told.
We did an autopsy many years ago on an elephant in Pilansburg, and it had been killed by a diaper because it gets into the animal's body. It absorbs the moisture. It sticks to the intestinal sides, and then causes a blockage, and the animal dies a painful death.
I can imagine. And for the animal, they see something, they go, oh, you know what? I mean, they might eat it by mistake or...
Or if it's a hyena floating past, it's lunch, you know, so...
It's in its belly
There we go. And I don't know what we do or how we appeal to people around our state of pollution in this country. The sides of the roads are horrific. You know, there's nowhere that you go that we're not knee-deep in rubbish.
Mm.
And we actually live in a garbage heap.
No, we do. I mean, I lived in the Middle East, and it always shocked me that if you went to a shop, you would say you just bought a magazine. They would put the magazine in a plastic bag. So everything was, you know, in the individual, so fruit, plastic bag, everything would be separated by a plastic bag. And if I said, no, please all, you know, put it all together, I was, you know, considered completely crazy. And it's offsetting that need for plastic bags. We totally get it. But it's human error. It's laziness, isn't it? It's not caring or it's not understanding. I don't know which one it is.
It is, and I think it comes down. It comes down to management, to post management after we've had whatever the product it is. But where do we start with it? Can we walk around? And I have a friend in Cape Town that went into a certain large store and emptied all of her possessions that she'd bought, and put them in her own take home bags. And emptied and left all the plastics in the store. And I'm wondering, does it take that? And then you look at the laws that we've got and our laws around what we need to do for health and safety.
Mm.
Well, we didn't die before. Yeah, I don't know why we're going to die now with all the garbage that we've got to package it in X way or Y way. because that's now acceptable for health and safety.
And you think the better educated we get, the more we would know. I would love listeners who have experienced what we're talking about, and why would you not, because it's everywhere, as Tim said, to get in touch with us. I mean, what do you do? Do you walk around the beach? Do you collect waste from the beach? And what is it that you find? What should we be doing? Call us, 011-883-0702, the WhatsApp number, 072-702-1702, and you can SMS us, 31702. Do you think government, or who's ever in charge, it's hard to tell these days, should be more punitive?
I think they should, but I don't think they've got the interest. And where do they place interest? Let's just look at that. We pay a levy on our plastic bags. It's mostly the highest turnover, profitable turnover in many of the companies. I don't see anything happening with the plastic levy. Mm. We pay a levy on motor car tyres. That's fallen apart. So everything that we pay these levies on seems to come to absolutely nothing. Motor car oil, and you know, I saw the other day they said that they were coming down hard on these roadside mechanics. Well, they don't have anywhere else to work, so they dump the oil into the gutter, and that disappears into the system. And if you go to somewhere like Germany, I worked in the forklift industry, and I went across to see how the Germans were doing the same company. And they would buy 10 litres of oil. They had to give back 10 litres or justification why there was 9.5. Mm. You know, and the law was abided by. I remember the late Peter Sarsted coming to South Africa. He was a very good friend of mine. And Peter came here one day and he said, you know, the laws in your country are really guidelines. Nobody abides by them. Mm. And he was fascinated. He said, I don't quite understand why you even make laws in South Africa.
But and, I mean, and it's, you can see it in our behavior. I mean, we don't, you know, from Nehawu to fees must fall to whatever it is. I mean, we have court interdict, we have all of that kind of stuff, and everyone's like, meh, what are you going to do about it? Meh,
so we staying with our plastics, we get our great one and we say, no, we've got the plastic collectors in South Africa and they're doing a wonderful job. Yes, they are. Mm. They're a source of pollution. But the plastics industry take responsibility to a point of saying, look what we're doing with educating the plastics guys, but they don't take full responsibility. Why are they a source of pollution? Well, if the plastic is clean, they get a better price. If the plastic is clean of labels, etc., they get a better price. Certain of the labels are also a plastic of some description. What do they do with them? Mm-hmm. Cut them off. Where are they working? At the side of the Yokskay River. The Klein Yokskay River, they're working in the culvert down the bottom of Sandton Drive. Okay, there's a whole plastics operation that's going there. Where's all that byproduct and that rubbish going? Back into the waterways, down into our rivers, and we just move the pollution around.
And I know this is awful to say, but do you think when people start dying, when they, you know, cut us open and they find big lumps of plastic, do you think that would work?
No.
No. Couldn't possibly happen to me.
It couldn't possibly happen to me. It's the mindset is wrong, and I don't know that we can repair the mindset. If we take somewhere like a friend again, went to Rwanda a little while ago, and he said he's in conservation. He said he wasn't thinking. His boots were dirty. So he put his boots in two plastic bags. He got to the customs official, opened his suitcase and said, plastic bags out, boots may continue. They cleaned his boots for him, gave him his boots back, so they knew he wasn't taking any new bugs into the country. And then promptly said to him, terribly sorry, if you know, you're about to get a fine for bringing plastic bags into our country.
Fantastic.
How can they do it and we can't?
Mm.
And it's not, you know, it's great to say ban the plastics. Our problem is ban the people.
Mm.
Because it's not one of these pieces in this bag here that I've brought you. And they're down here as far as there's actually the raw plastic, which is the little noodles. And I'm sure you've heard of the plastic noodles. There's a handful of noodles in there, which are little plastic balls before that becomes a plastic bag or a piece of Frisbee or whatever we've got on the table. And I think that, again, you know, that gets into our ocean and our beaches are covered in them. Because some ship went along and dumped the container off the side, which then burst open and polluted the place with noodles. And those noodles have gone, they've tracked them. Obviously, you can look at the chemical compositions and they track them. Those noodles go from Mozambique to Cape Town. Same noodles.
Yeah.
Same containers. Mm. You know,
hey, nobody in South Africa is going to do anything. Let's just do a little detour and dump our stuff.
Yeah, we'll just dump our stuff along here.
Fantastic.
And it was very interesting talking to the dog walkers and the runners and all and the people on the beach. And there are a lot of retirees down there, and they say that they carry two plastic bags, and they don't have to move more than 1 meter to fill those two plastic bags. And then what do they do with them? You know, they say you put them on the outside, you take them off the beach, and they mostly end up back in the beach because the landfill doesn't work properly. So it's very, very interesting. I don't know. What is the answer? We pay a levy in Johannesburg, don't we, for recycling. I don't know where the recycling plants are and if they even work.
Well, we know what happens to those levies, don't we? We've got a WhatsApp from John. He said he's driving back from RT through Isando, and it's often visitors' first impression of Johannesburg. He said the road is overgrown with grass and weeds and litter lines the highway. It's disgusting. John from Kyalami. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, you see people, and I just have this, from 0 to 1,000 incandescent with rage when I see people throwing litter out of their car. It's so lazy. And I think it's a bit like picking your nose in the car. You think if nobody sees you.
If you can't see them,
they can't see you.
Yeah. I'd love this to be a project. And I'd like to really get people's input and to understand how we solve it. We solved it to a point. And let's just touch on, for example, the Warburgia salutaris. That was solved, a bit of the pollution in some of the rural areas where they wanted seedlings. They had something called food for trees, etc. So you grew trees and you could exchange those trees for school books and foods and all sorts of things through Wildlands Trust. And they had it running. But everybody grew things in little containers. And they thought that was great. But then what happened, of course, is when it came time to planting it, you took it out the little plastic container and just chucked the container to one side. Yeah. So all you did was you just slowed down the pollution level for that point of time. But yeah, I don't quite get to the bottom of it. Australia's got a very good way. Your dirt bin goes, I think on a Monday, it's got your household waste, and on a Friday or whatever day it is, it goes away with the plastics, etc.
We revel in being badly behaved. Cecilia Cooper got in touch with us. She said, good morning, Jane and Tim. I just can't get most of people in our office to recycle. They casually flip the empty water bottle into 3 waste paper basket. We have 2 clean giant bins in the office supplied by a wonderful recycling company, and it's just too much trouble for people to toss their paper and plastics in the bin. At many supermarket tills, I've been described as cheap by the packers because I say, no thanks, no plastic. Good girl, well done. The human race must be the most pernicious species on the planet and beyond. Frustrated. Yes, we hear you. Fluffy Dilger says, hi, the alternative earbuds, bamboo. I soaked one in the water for 2 weeks, no breakdown, then buried in the garden. Still no breakdown. So we just expand.
Yeah, bamboo. So we've got the paper ones and we get the bamboo ones.
She says, where's the testing of these products? Do we give a product nature's name and we, the public, just accept it? That's a good point as well, isn't it?
Well, that's a wonderful point. You know, there are a number of, and again, I'm going to stay with the turtles because it's an interest. It's amazing how many companies have got turtles on their billboards now because it's the in thing. Mm. And you call up their corporate affairs and you say it, or their marketing department, say, what are you doing for turtle conservation? Really? Turtle conservation? You mean that we have turtle conservation in South Africa? Yes, world-leading turtle conservation in South Africa, that we can't get anything done because it's not recognized by government.
We've ticked that box.
We ticked that box.
All right, let us move on to medicinal trees. What did you find there? Leave the litter behind.
We'll leave our litter behind.
Shun it.
Yeah, yeah.
Shame on you.
We know that nothing's going to happen to it.
No.
Very interesting. We've been doing this project since 2011, around about there, 2011, 2013. And it is so interesting to see how we've destroyed our medicinal trees in South Africa, predominantly by mutie hunters. Don't blame the traditional healers. The traditional healers are really interesting people. generally quite elderly, and they've got this wonderful knowledge of the bush and of the trees and all they're working with. If we look at the Warburgia as an example, the pepper bark, which I'm going to bring you some in the studio one of these days, they have got like a little tool that they take a scallop of the bark out so the tree can heal itself. And they believe in really sustainability. Unfortunately, what happens is that the mooty hunters come along and they strip the bark of the tree.
Look what's happening in Cape Town.
Look what's happening in Cape Town. Same idea. And what we've done with this project is that we said, okay, how do we address it? And one of the things that we did was reduce, and I'm saying this is the SAPI Rare, Threatened, and Endangered Species program. One of the things that we did is we reduced the value of the actual bark. We've changed the trees on the Warburgia. We went through a lot of work with universities, and we found out that the roots and bark are what's used by the community normally. We found that the fresh leaves and the fresh twigs are the new growth has the same consistency and potency as the rest. And that was one of the interesting challenges as well, was to get the guys, get the traditional healers to accept plants that are nursery grown. They want plants that are in the wild, that have been that have been under stress, etc., etc. So we don't put the plants in the nurseries under stress, because we want to get them up to the point where we can get them into the ground. But they then get into a normal environment, and those plants are planted in the traditional healers' homes, in the community houses as well. And that way we've just got out about, I think we've just passed 65,000 now of one species of tree, and we're working on three others. The acceptability is there. Because it's now easily easily available, the mooty hunters, they're going into protected areas, but nobody wants to buy their product anymore. Why is there a lot of the problem? Purely the number of humans. And they were explaining to us that in an area there would be one traditional healer. Now they're 5 or 10 because of the number of people that are living in that area. So it's completely unsustainable to go along and remove these medicinal trees. Obviously,
but that's smart, isn't it? Providing them what they need, so that you get rid of the bounty hunters.
And that's exactly what we're doing with this project. And that's where there's now the Prunus africana is the next tree coming online, the Ocotea, and then the one that they're busy ripping off in Cape Town, which is the assegai, which grows across the country. But it must be done with the community. And because SAPI is a tree company, obviously they spend their time just growing. I manage this project, or we manage this project for them. And it's actually a rewarding project, because you can see these people going away and actually understanding that what you're doing is giving back. And they can see now, oh, it was regionally extinct. Now we're getting the trees back again. There's a lot of issues with things, with government, because you can't move, you know, you've got to have a tree within 50 kilometers of an area deemed as indigenous to that area, even if there's no difference in it, and it's got to be, the seed must have been collected. So that's something that we're busy working on at the moment, how to get through that.
I'm going to read you a WhatsApp. It's got to do with plastic and waste, but you know, it links to this as well. She says, Dr. Vuka Vuka says, good morning. It starts from education, from childhood. While still at primary school, we were assigned to collect or clean the schoolyard. Some will make a joke of us, and some say we are insane. But I think the whole thing now is that we've got to make this kind of action cool. And same thing when it comes to protecting our trees. It's got to be cool, actually, to look after them, to do things in a sustainable fashion.
Well, it has to be. And I think that goes across the whole planet. And I think one of the items, and I'm keen, we're going to run out of time as usual. I'm keen to get into what Jane likes in the environment, because then I've always done this, is then I look at bringing a lot of the subject matter that you enjoy as well. And I find it very rewarding. You know, just to be able to share the knowledge, share the people that we get hold of. Because after all these years, goodness me, this program is now just on 33 years old.
Yeah.
And, you know, consequently, we've got this vast amount of people that we talk to, and sometimes it's up to second generation. And to bring them in and talk to them and get to understand what we've got to do in the environment. And I think the first thing we've got to do is we've got to stop saying we are saving the planet. Okay, mm. We're not saving the planet. The planet doesn't need us. It's got rid of seven times or six times before. It's got rid of the annoyances that have been lurking on the planet. We need the planet.
We're probably right up there.
we're like a bunch of fleas.
We will talk about that. But as you say, we're running out of time. So I'll get in touch with you for that. You know what I'm finding fascinating at the moment? The sounds that animals make and plants make to talk to each other. But going back to plants, these medicinal trees, I mean, what are they often used for? What are you seeing and how effective are they?
That's through people like Ben Erik van Wyk. They've done all the tests to discover that these are really medicinal trees. So the Warburgia is used for stomach ailments, urinary tract issues, malaria. There are a whole host of issues that come through it. It's smoked, ground, chewed, put into tea infusions, etc. Mm. So there's almost no end of, there's the usual like a rhino horn type of arrangement, but that's really way down the line. Mm. It's used, it's headaches, it's clearing the sinuses, it's, as I say, a lot of urinary tract. There's a lot of stuff around urinary tract, a lot of stuff around chests.
Placebo effect, it really does.
It really does.
You don't have to buy into it.
And that's where some of them have gone. Things like Prunus africana is highly used in not only homeopathy, but in actual Western medicine. And that's where there's so much learned from it now. And I think the change is going across. Even my doctor mate, he looks more and more to using Warburgia to treat a urinary tract infection rather than using something that's an antibiotic.
And that's the way we want to go, isn't it? As natural as possible. Tim, always very good to have you with us, and we'll see you again next week.
We'll see you next week.